All right, welcome back. Great to see everybody. I have more tea, which is good. Otherwise, I will definitely lose my voice. So let's talk about the easy part. We asked the hard questions, and now we're going to look at some tactical things that will make your message just work better. Once you have something that people are enthusiastic about spending money on, then that's when we apply copywriting tactics, just to make it easier to make that decision. Your job as a copywriter, your job as a sales professional, is to make it easy for the right person to make a buying decision for the product that's well suited to them. So the first tactic is what's called voice of customer. And we talked before the break about, all these answers come from your audience. They come from the audience that you're serving. Hide that video panel. So the voice of the customer is the words that they use to describe their problem. This comes from surveys. It can actually even come from Copy Hackers has written some really good articles about using the voice of customer. Something they do is they look at like Amazon book reviews for books about the topic. So if your topic, for example, I have a copywriting client that I really love, and she's a registered dietitian who helps people who have binge eating disorder. So when we were doing the copy, first of all, they had a great survey, so I was able to read the raw responses. And you don't want multiple choice. You want where people are writing about, what's the hardest part about dealing with this. But I also went on Amazon and I looked at reviews of books about recovering from binge eating disorder. And you're looking at how people describe their problem. So what's the language? What are the phrases they use? What kinds of analogies do they use? What kinds of metaphors do they use? Very commonly with binge eating disorder, people use the metaphor of, it's like another person took over my body and did all this stuff, and I wasn't even there to. And when I looked up, I had just, eaten this huge volume of food, and I felt miserable, but I just didn't even know how I got there. Saw that again and again and again. So when you use that in your communication, people understand that you understand what they're going through. And empathy is one of the most important principles of copywriting and marketing and business, frankly. All right, second tip is to start with emotion. So even your most logical buyer is making decisions emotionally first and then justifying them with logic. And we can say this with confidence based on studies of people where the emotional part of their brain has been damaged and they can't make decisions. They can't decide what color shirt to put on in the morning. So even people who have a very logical personality, even people who consider themselves very logical people, decisions are made with emotion first, sometimes really in a way that people don't fully understand, and then justified with logic. Now, it does not mean that everybody's marketing needs to sound like a soap opera. Emotion is not over-the-top drama. Emotion is emotion. So in business, people often make decisions out of fear. They often make decisions out of quest for status, because in a lot of organizations, right, status is a thing. The more status I have in the organization, the more money I might make, and the less crummy jobs I have to do. I can rise to a leadership position and get more interesting work. So business to business is emotional, just like business to consumer is. But you have to think about the emotions that this person is processing when they're in that context. So it's, you know, it can be fear, it can be frustration, it can be desire, it can be, you know, insecurity, it can be looking for wanting to get confidence, it can be desire for connection. But all decisions to move one way or another start with some kind of emotional response or that varying baseline. You know, every organism that has more than like three brain cells moves toward behaviors that are associated with pleasure, and they move away from behaviors and stimuli that are associated with pain. It's just people do it, monkeys do it, fish do it, worms do it. Everything does it. So it can be as simple as that, or it can be something a little more nuanced. So when we start with emotion, where do we put that emotion? Well, probably it's going to be in the headline. So the headline is going to at least speak to a scenario that has an emotional component attached to it. Frustration, failure, fear, fear of missing out, or desire, you know, desire to get something, desire to move toward some stimulus that's going to create pleasure. The introduction is another place where you want to make sure that you are connecting to the emotional reality of the situation. Again, you're not writing it like a soap opera. You're not being overly dramatic. You're being dramatic appropriate to the situation. But if your offer solves frustration, frustration should be in the introduction, and it should probably be in the headline. And diving into the problem that your offer solves is always a great way to generate an emotional response. Because when we are working on problems, we work on them with a certain amount of emotional involvement, engagement. So what's the problem that this person is looking to you to get better? Talking about problems is always a great way to immediately capture interest, immediately create a heightened emotional sense that's appropriate to what you sell, and then you can move forward to talking about solutions. So we talked a little bit about this before the break, and we're going to talk about it a little bit more, which is we talked about benefits. Why is this person making this investment with you? What do they get out of it? You're asking somebody to give you probably some money, probably some time, probably some emotional energy, some focus. You know, they're making room in their schedule for you. There's an opportunity cost. If they work with you, then they're not working with somebody else. What do they get out of it? What they get out of it are the benefits. So there are two flavors. The first is emotional, and we put it first because it is where people make decisions first. And emotional benefits are anything, you know, easing up on frustration, feeling more confident, feeling more connected, feeling more secure and safe is a big emotional benefit. Feeling like you have more autonomy is a big benefit. If you have a professional project or service, and it makes that person better at what they do, they both have more security in their own organization. They also have more autonomy and freedom to go out and get a position in another organization or go out on their own. If this one is not, you know, if this one goes out of business or they stop being good to work with. So you want to know what the emotional benefits are to your product or your service. And, you know, now there are certain kinds of products that do start to get a little bit tricky. Like if you sell complex electronic equipment to power plants, you know, that's going to be tricky. But even then, the person making that purchasing decision has options, and they make the choice based on things like, I don't want to get in trouble. I want to look good for my boss. Or I want to solve something that's been driving me crazy. I want to solve a problem that's just driving me crazy. So there are still emotional benefits, even in that hyper-technical, very rational project. Something that's overlooked a lot is to give people a story to tell. So, you know, you can buy something for your house at, you know, Pottery Barn or Target, and that's fine. It came from Pottery Barn or Target. It does the job. It looks nice. Fine. Or you could buy it from something like Etsy, where it has a story, right? So then when somebody says, oh, that's cool, where'd you get it? You can say, oh, I got it on Etsy. It's this woman, and she lives in Vermont, and she only makes like 10 of them a year, and she uses all upcycled materials. You know, you have a story to tell. That's cool. That's a benefit. A good story to tell around the product is a great benefit. Seth Godin wrote a book about it called All Marketers Are Liars, and then he updated it to All Marketers Are Storytellers, which I thought was kind of wimping out. But if you have an unusual product or an unusual service, it's really cool when it comes with a story. And I always love to spend my money with something where I can talk about the person, what's different about it, what's maybe more handcrafted or more individualistic about it. And then the second flavor is the logical benefits. And these are, you know, these are typically around quality, efficiency, something that even something that's a pure emotion purchase, like a pair of really expensive shoes, you'll typically find that somewhere in the marketing for these shoes, they'll talk about how many hours the shoe artisan spends on every single shoe and, you know, how the leather is tanned. And they'll give you some of the justification for the high price point. It's not just like, this is a ton of money because you're an idiot and you'll pay anything. Lol, you know, that's not a good logical benefit. And the reason we need logical benefits is actually for a very emotional reason, which is people do not like to look or feel stupid for making a purchase. Nobody wants to feel like a sucker for buying something. So when we give the logical benefits, this is priced the way it is priced because it's more expensive upfront, but you're going to save a ton of money in the long run. That's a story. It's also a logical benefit. This is priced the way it is because it's made completely by hand by one of only three artisans in Japan who know how to use this technique. And they're all 85 years old. And it takes 4 months from start to finish. I have a pen that that's true of. I have a couple of pens that that's true of. So the logical benefits are the justification for the purchase and the things that people are going to get out of it. You're going to put in $500, you're going to get out $5,000. And that's realistic. And here's why. Because we've done it before, because we've done it for people who are similar to you. So you need both. A lot of the logical benefits are closely tied to the features of the product. What are the dimensions? What does it do? What's the patent? What's the, you know, premium materials that you use? That those are features, but they're also logical benefits. Which kind of brings us to bringing up the objections. So a lot of times when we're trying to persuade somebody, we don't bring up the negative because we're kind of afraid, like, well, if I bring it up, maybe they hadn't even thought about it. And then I'm just shooting myself in the foot. I'll wait for them to bring it up and then I can talk about it. But there's two scenarios here. One is that person has already thought about it. And the fact that you're not saying anything makes them nervous. That's the most common scenario. The second most common scenario is, no, they hadn't thought about it. But when you bring it up first, you look very ethical. When you say, I don't know if this is true for you, but a lot of people are concerned about moving forward because they feel like the reliability is not good on this kind of machinery or something like that. When you bring it up first and then you address it credibly, you look really credible and you look really trustworthy. And you will talk yourself into 100 sales for every one that the person thinks, oh, I never thought about it not being reliable. I'm not going to buy anything. I mean, that could happen, but it's not going to happen nearly as often as the other scenario where the person's really glad you brought it up. So the most common objection, honestly, in almost everything is, yeah, I do believe that works for most people, but I don't think it works for me. I think most people would be able to use that, but I think there's something uniquely messed up about me and I can't do it. And I mean, products, services, you know, my company is too dysfunctional to use that, which can be, that can be a very rational objection. And it can be an excellent point of differentiation. If somebody says our company is too dysfunctional to use that software, you can come in and say, I hear that a lot. So when a buyer feels like it's not going to work for me because there's something messed up about me, or it just there's something about me that I can never make that work, your message is either, no, it's not made for customers like you. I think, you know, you probably find a better fit with another company. Sometimes you say that, that's ethical. Or here's how it worked for somebody who's actually just like you. So that's called a case study, right? Using examples of how somebody similar to that person overcame this objection is the best way to handle objections, always. And a case study can be 20 pages long. It could be a long white paper or something, but it can also just be a one paragraph story. It can be a quick before and after. It doesn't have to be super lengthy. Using examples, here's how people like you have solved this problem with what I offer, and you can do it too, because we're going to give you more support, or we have way better documentation, or whatever it might be. The testimonial, of course, and testimonials are often mini case studies. Testimonials are often scenarios where somebody comes in and says, I wasn't really sure this was going to work for me, but I gave it a try and then it worked. And that was amazing. And now I'm better. That's the most powerful testimonial you can find. And so one of the things as a persuader that you always want to be doing is looking around for people to get a success with your product and then talk about it. Show you a picture. If somebody emails you, and I've had this happen recently, and says, you know what, I tried something out that I learned in the writing workshop, and I changed the rejection on a writing submission to an acceptance. You know, I gotta love that, right? So anytime somebody kind of comes to you with that, always ask them, that's really cool. Would it be okay with you if I use that as a testimonial? It helps other people, you know, find the course or the product. You can ask people to submit photos of, you know, Saddleback Leather is really brilliant about this. They get people who buy their very, very expensive premium leather bags, and then they send them photos of having these bags on safari or, you know, all kinds of crazy, difficult environments, and the bags are holding up because they're tanks. They're showing the product in action. That's how people make the decision to buy. They see it. Remember that we're social monkeys, okay? We're sitting in the tree looking at the other monkeys. And if the other monkeys are eating that kind of bright red fruit that's on this tree, it's probably okay to eat. That's very core to the brain of a social animal. We look around for cues about what is safe to do and what's a good idea to do. So the more proof you offer in terms of case studies, testimonials, other people who succeeded, the easier it is for that person to say, okay, yeah, all right, I could see this. I could see myself actually getting the value out of this. Fourth technique, this one is really easy. There should be a link to this in the ebook. A simple call to action. Just let people know what to do. So instead of, now I'm all for content that kind of makes the case for what you're selling and educates people and, you know, does it in a kind of a subtle way. But you also want to wrap up with, here's what to do next. Click this link to register for the free copywriting workshop, right? That's a call to action. Because people are distracted and there's a lot going on, and it's ridiculous to expect people to have to solve a logic puzzle to move forward with you. So just a call to action is a very direct indication at every point in your sales process. You know, if there's a landing page to buy, then there needs to be a button that says something like add to cart, or, you know, register now. Simple, clear, and very, very direct. And just take a look through all of your persuasive copy and make sure you're telling people very clearly what should they do next now that they've, you know, kind of had a mental shift. The fifth kind of trick or technique is to discourage procrastination. We're in a procrastination-rich environment because of the distractions, because honestly, a lot of people are very foggy right now from stress and, you know, pandemic brain and all the things. So giving people a reason to act today instead of later is very beneficial. You will dramatically see a difference. There are people who believe this is unethical, and I just can't agree with that. So what does this look like? This looks like offering, let's say, a course or a service on more of a launch model. So you're saying, okay, I've got 10 spots available, or I've got 100 spots available, or whatever it is. I'm opening spots for 1 week, and then I'm going to close down, and we'll open again later. That's basically a launch model. You can also give incentives to people. You know, if you pick this up by the end of the day today, then you get an incentive, like a coupon. You see a lot of that with like retailers who email you coupons. It's okay. My problem with offering incentives on a time basis is you always get somebody after the time expired who's like, well, can I have it even though I'm late? And then you have the choice of either making them feel crappy and associating crap feeling with you, or kind of caving. And then you're just, why are you even saying things if you're not going to live up to them? So I'd rather just sort of have it open, have it closed, but give people deadlines, give people good reasons to get going today. Sometimes the reason's inherent. If you're selling potty training, advice or equipment, people need it when they need it. The urgency is already in the product. But most things, if people can put it off, they will put it off. Give them a reason not to. And you can just say, you don't have to make up some goofy reason. You just have to say, you know, most people procrastinate. And I don't want that for you, because if you procrastinate, you're not ever going to get the benefit of getting this problem solved. So because of that, I put a deadline on it to encourage you to just, you know, just gives you a little extra incentive to just go ahead and make it happen. I do a lot of things on a launch model because I'd rather focus on having persuasive conversations and then doing the teaching or delivering the service rather than trying to mix everything up all the time. It's not good for my brain. And keep in mind, I'm shooting through these so fast, and I know the ebook does go through all of these in more detail with more explications and examples. So if something's got you totally flattened and lost, just drop it into the Q&A at the end. But also you're gonna get the ebook, so you're gonna get an explanation. And all of these I've written about, and I'm happy to point you to articles and all kinds of things. All right, number six is something that is, I'm not the only copywriter who does this, but it's unusual among copywriters and persuasive marketers. And I think it's something that's a little bit of a secret sauce for my work, and that is to bring people back to safety. So classic marketing operates on a problem agitate model. So the problem is that your teeth don't feel clean. But the real problem is that you have no friends because your breath is bad and everybody hates you, but they won't tell you. Okay. The problem is dirty teeth. The agitation is that everybody in your life hates you, but they don't want to tell you and they avoid you. And the solution is to buy our special toothpaste, right? That's a model, right? How often have we seen that ad? A million times. But when people already feel unsafe, which they do in the modern world anyway, and then you throw in a couple of pandemics and you throw in runaway inflation and all kinds of scary things, people are already like their neurobiology is maxed, right? It's maxed. They're already in maximum anxiety. People in maximum anxiety have a hard time making decisions, and they're going to have a hard time making a decision to go forward with you. So make sure people are safe. My client who had the binge eating disorder product, this was so important with that product, with that project, not to trigger, literally psychologically trigger their trauma. So make sure people feel safe with you. Make sure people know there are options. Make sure people don't just leave people in this pain state. Bring them back to a safe place. Let them know they're not alone. Let them know there are options. Do not make yourself like you will die broken alone unless you buy my $2,000 course. That's predatory. That is predatory. It's, you know, I have a $2,000 course. Nothing wrong with that. That's good. That's a fair price for a really good, solid marketing course. But you will not die broken alone if you don't take the course. You have other options. Here's some good free courses that you can get you started. Here's some good books you can read to get yourself started. Start making some revenue, and then you're going to be ready for my course that I'm offering, because where I'm putting my offer is people who are a little further down the line. Bring them back to safety. Don't put people in that panic position, because A, it's unethical, and B, they will leave. People will move away from people who make them feel bad and never offer any relief. I mean, you hope, right? Anybody psychologically healthy will leave, and they should. So I always like to sort of reassure people and not do a lot of doom and gloom panic marketing that just leaves people in this anxiety state. I always want to bring them back and let them know we're in an ecosystem here. We look out for each other. There are multiple ways to solve problems. I feel like I'm the best way to solve this flavor of my problem, but we're in an ecosystem and we help each other. Another thing you can do to reduce the anxiety is do not offer. I don't know if you have like ever had this experience where you go to a restaurant and there are hundreds of things on the menu. And you're just, it's like, who can spend this much time assessing all these things before they order? Like, I cannot make this decision right now. Reduce the number of choices you're asking people to make. You will always increase the number of people who pick it up. Give them one or two or three options. You can just have one. It's this or it's not this. You can have silver, gold, platinum, or you can have regular premium. And most of the time, unless, you know, you're offering like a physical product, like a t-shirt that comes in 10 colors or something, you'll get much better pickup when you reduce the number of choices. A clarity cleanup is another way to make your marketing more safe. Make things clear. Don't let people just be confused. Make it clear again. You'll still miss a little bit. That's okay. You can answer questions. Make yourself available for questions. But bring people back to safety by making things clear and not overwhelming people. Alrighty. And then we reduce the risk. Typically, this is a money-back guarantee. You can't always offer a money-back guarantee. If you offer one-on-one time, don't do that. Your time is irreplaceable. But, you know, if it's a course or a an ebook or something like that, or in a lot of physical products, you can reduce the risk and say, you know, if you don't like it, you can get your money back, or you can get part of your money back. I am not a fan of the trend with digital products, especially like courses and programs, of saying you can get your money back, but you have to prove to me you gave it a real try. Prove to me that you did the workbooks. Prove to me. That's just like, don't do that. Don't. It's trashy. It's trashy behavior. For one-on-one time, I don't think you should give money back at all. And for things that are not one-on-one time that are scalable, I think you should be generous and give people's money back. But don't, it's your job. You take the risk on yourself. You don't make them take a risk by going with you. They're already risking their time and their attention. And you can reduce the risk even more, again, by nurturing that ecosystem mentality, preserving your own reputation, putting yourself out there. The more you put yourself out there, you're on LinkedIn or Facebook or Instagram, whatever, you're known, you're visible. If you're trashy, then you're going to get a bad reputation. The more visible you are, the more people feel like, I don't feel like this is a risk to go with this person. I feel like if they were going to be trashy, then I would be seeing people talk about that. The more safe you can make it for people to move forward, the more you can take the risk on yourself instead of making them, you know, risk feeling stupid, the better off you're going to be. Your kind of overlying message is that we're a lot alike and your welfare is my key concern. So if you think about your copy, your sales page, all of your copy, including the content that leads people up to that page, that's the message. You and I are very similar and I care about your well-being. If that's the vibe, that's a persuasive vibe. That's a vibe that people say, yeah, I feel like this is where I want to put my dollars. You care about their outcomes. You're good at solving problems. You're actually capable. You can solve this kind of problem. And the problems that you solve are the ones that are important to them. And it's all in the ebook, so no need to scramble. All right, pretty close to wrapping up here. Again, this is an intro, right? We could go so deep. I mean, I don't offer a $2,000 copywriting course, but we could. Right? We could go in on all of this. And there's some very good ones out there, higher priced courses that do really get into it. But this is the basic persuasive environment. This is how you construct a persuasive message that picks people up today and doesn't burn them for the next opportunity to buy. All right. As we talked about at the top, and I promise this is like a minute and a half, but I want to let you know, because this Shark Week bonus is a workshop that's normally attached to my Remarkable Writing Workshop. It's a workshop I teach to content creators, primarily. Some of the folks in this group have been through that workshop. Some of the folks like here right now. And it's a workshop that is designed to create that ecosystem. It's designed to create that writing difference where you're putting out what you're good at, what you do, you know, your approach, your values, your personality, all that stuff in an interesting and memorable way. It's a workshop on bringing your writing up to that level where you don't sound like a bot, where you no one else really could imitate you, because it's really about being yourself. It is about being the best version of yourself in your writing. So I love this workshop, but I've got so much going on through next summer that I'm not going to be able to lead it for a while. And I know there were some people who wanted to pick it up and didn't jump in last time. So what I thought would be fair is to offer a curated collection of sessions from that workshop on making your writing more memorable, on how to choose words, how to choose analogies, you know, that kind of thing, where you're creating that ecosystem of writing. And I bundled that with my Creative Fears implementation community, which is every single Monday we get together, 50 weeks a year. We take like Christmas off and stuff like that. We get together on Mondays. We plan our priorities for the week. It takes 10 minutes, but we get together and we really think about what we want to get done that week in our copywriting or our blog or our newsletter or something else. Sometimes it's our families, you know. We plan out our week. And then we've got virtual co-working. So if you always put off writing your newsletter, you can write your newsletter on Wednesdays because that's when we write our newsletter in the group. So it's unlimited digital co-working and check-ins for 6 months. Lots of support, lots of general accountability. I lead essentially all of the North American sessions myself. We also have Australian sessions led by my partner, Claire. And it really works. So I'm not going to give you the full sales pitch because I moved house this week and I do not have it ready for you. I need to do the curation and I need to figure out, okay, what are like the 3 to 4 workshops that I really think are really going to get you the value. The reason I'm curating it is that the original workshop was $800. It would not be fair for me to offer it to you for less money than that. This just doesn't seem respectful. So should get some information on it probably Monday next week. And I'll be talking a lot more about that implementation community in September when we're kind of in back to school mode. But I know for a fact there's some people who wanted to jump in. So I just thought I'd make it available. So end of that. Yeah, I moved house. I moved house on Tuesday. It's Thursday. I'm really tired. So yeah. This is great from Shree. My happiest learning from the workshop was that one can do business writing and still be super creative. Dropping that dichotomy from my mind was a big thing for me. I love that. And can I use it as a testimonial? I want to get your permission. Thank you. That's a really great statement. Joe has written a book from being in that workshop. Joe has been with me for a long time now, and he has been using the resources, and he's in the Creative First community to write a book. All right, y'all are great. I'm going to pause, stop the recording here, and I will stick around for questions if you have questions. Feel free, if you want to, drop the question in the chat. If you've got a motor, just drop it in the chat. It'll be recorded, and then when we get the replay ready, you'll have it available. So, Lane, thank you. Really good to see you. All right, stopping the recording now, and then we'll pick up again with Q&A.